I'm Julie Burstein, in for Leonard Lopate this afternoon. In 2000, the websites of eBay, Amazon, Dell, E-Trade, and Yahoo were all brought to a standstill by hacker attacks. The cost to these businesses amounted to millions of dollars, and the attacks vividly laid bare our technological vulnerabilities. And that's a mouthful, technological vulnerabilities. Soon a multi-nation manhunt for the hacker was launched involving the FBI, the Mounties, local police, and private security forces. The perpetrator turned out to be a 15-year-old Canadian boy named Michael Calce. In his book, Mafia Boy, A Portrait of the Hacker as a Young Man, he tells his story for the first time. The book is published by Lions Press, and I'm glad it brings him here today. Welcome.
Hi, Julie. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I was curious at first when I picked up the book about your title. You have a play on the James Joyce Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man. As a hacker and in the hacker community, is this seen as an art?
In some sense, yes, especially in the earlier days of hacking, where it was more about exploration and, you know, testing the status quo. It was a form of art, yeah.
You were very young when you started experimenting with computers. What drew you into computers, and how old were you?
I was 6 years old, actually, when I got my first PC. And something about them, I mean, I was intrigued and infatuated. It seemed like it was encoded in my DNA, so to speak. I was just drawn to them, and as soon as I started meddling with them, I wanted to see how far I can go with it.
Had you ever, you know, you were only six, so maybe there weren't a lot of other passions, you know, as a six-year-old, but were there other things where you were fascinated by language and by the way things worked?
I really liked the way the concept, the way computers were, especially since, you know, people were using DOS at this time and Windows wasn't exactly predominant, was in click, click, click. And I was fascinated by, you know, typing your way through browsing through directories. That's really where the infatuation started.
Were your parents computer savvy?
Not at all.
And so how did you come upon computers to begin with?
A little bit of a sad story. My parents ended up getting divorced. And, you know, my father, when I would go visit him on the custody, he basically had to come up with an idea to basically keep me preoccupied. You know, you have a six-year-old child. What do you do? I mean, he could have, for all you know, he could have given me a fishing rod and I could have been a professional fisher. But it turned out he took a PC from work and he ended up giving me a personal computer when I was 6 years old.
As you started playing with computers, what was it that drew you in? And what was it that drew you into this world of not just doing what most of us do on computers, but understanding how they work and how you could subvert what was going on?
I had a pretty good understanding. For some reason, it seemed pretty natural to me, even though computers are really considered to be unnatural. I was drawn to them, and I progressed throughout the years. I was just fascinated. I was hungry for knowledge at this point. And, you know, when you're pretty young, your brain is like a sponge. You're just absorbing information. I was just so fascinated with what you could do with a computer. I mean, I started obviously playing some games, but then I started to see that, you know, there was a lot more potential with computers.
How about school, though? Did you find yourself that fascinated with subjects at school?
Not particularly. I was very good at math from a natural aspect. I just understood how problem solving worked, and I understood formulas very easy. But schooling wasn't my strong point because, I mean, I found it quite easy and it wasn't really intriguing to me in the sense that I found what they were teaching was pretty easy, so I wasn't really being challenged. So I started to fall apart at school at some point.
You also, you know, you talk about the tragedy in your family life of your parents' divorce, but you had tragedy also in your life as a kid with a dear friend who was killed. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. Well, I'm from Montreal, Quebec, and there happens to be a lot of snow during the winter season. And it just so happened that they weren't shaving the snowbanks in the driveways. And I had my 12-year-old best friend happened to be playing in the driveway, and he happened to lean out of the driveway, and a car nicked him, and he happened to die on the spot.
Mm. How, when you were playing with your friends, and this friend in particular, the two of you shared a love of computers.
Yeah, he was one of my actually only friends who shared that love for computers. Most of them were, you know, I was also into sports, obviously. And most of my friends weren't really well-versed with computers. They hadn't even experienced that technology yet. And he was one of my only friends who I could relate to when it came to computers.
At that time, when your friend Nick died, had the two of you been playing with this idea of how to hack into things, or did that come later?
He never actually got into the hacking component. I never really revealed that to him. I never really had the chance. I figured I would bring him in a bit later on. It's just that he had the same infatuation with computers as I did.
But you had already been playing with hacking by that point.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
How did that begin? Because that's not something... A lot of kids are fascinated by computers, but don't learn how to delve into other people's computers remotely.
It all basically started with an AOL free CD. They used to hand out the 30-day free trial for AOL, and I happened to get one of them in the mail when I was 9 years old. And I embarked online, and I was like, wow, this is a whole new portal. There's people doing the same thing that I'm doing, and they're looking to explore technology. And at one point, actually, someone did something known as a punt, and it's basically where they send so many messages that you get booted off AOL. And I was just extremely fascinated how someone was able to, you know, sever my connection online from thousands of miles away.
Oh, they did a punt from your computer. They were able to hack into your computer.
Exactly. Huh. That's how it started. Someone punted me offline, and I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. How was someone able to do this?
You know, in hearing you speak, I think about musical prodigies who by the age of 6 or 7 are performing piano feats that nobody can imagine a small child to do. Here you had this prodigious talent in an area that had to be secret. What was that like for you as a kid, you know, to know that, you know, soon after this, you were doing the same thing, that you could do things that most grown-ups couldn't, but you couldn't talk about it?
You know, it was a bit, I was a pretty shy kid growing up, so I was used to being pretty reserved, but obviously, like, that was a dark secret that I didn't really want to make public. And I guess it was kind of hard on me that I couldn't really discuss it with anyone, or, you know, that's why I really had no guidance. I was just basically a kid having some fun and exploring what was out there. Maybe if I had spoken more about it, you know, someone would have stirred me in the right direction and said, you know, what you're doing is wrong. You could focus that energy and do something positive with it.
You say that you were just playing around, but do you think by the age of 14 or 15 you had an understanding that what you were doing was destructive?
Definitely, there was a destructive element to it, and I knew that. To what extent of the gravity of what I was doing, that part I didn't really understand too well.
In terms of the repercussions
Absolutely.
For what was going to happen. So describe what in 2000 you did. What was it that you were playing around with to see what you could do with these large companies?
Well, I ended up going through all the major U.S. universities and colleges. And I actually took control of their networks, and I basically made something known as a botnet. And I connected, a botnet is basically when all computers and networks that you have under your control, you make one huge network. And with that, you're able to send one command where all basically the slaves will respond to you. And the slaves are all the computers that you had compromised up to that point. And with that, I was able to unleash unparalleled damage.
Why did you do this?
At the time, I was actually engaged in a hacker war, and this hacker war is still continuing on today. A lot of people are completely unaware of it. It's completely underground on the internet. Actually, you know, I wasn't targeting these companies specifically. It was more the amount of bandwidth and internet power and internet speed they had under their control. And if I wanted to test what I was doing, a good example would be to go after, you know, the big e-commerce giants who had huge servers.
And when you went after them, what did you unleash? What was it that you would do?
It was called a mass distributed denial of service attack. That's actually something I pioneered. Denial of service had already existed at this point. I basically pioneered the mass denial of service concept.
And denial of service means the servers are so busy that nobody else can get in.
Exactly. You're basically overloading their servers with too much data so that if, you know, you were a regular user or consumer and you were visiting their website, at the time it would say that this site is non-existent or temporarily unavailable.
And would you said you put together all these university servers. Did they know that you were doing this? Would they be able to tell that their servers were being used to launch this attack?
They had no idea that I was infiltrated all their networks. I mean, in some cases, there has been some administrators who have noticed what I was doing. But, you know, for this specific attack, nobody had known in terms of the university administrators, had no idea.
You say that there was a hacker war. Who were you fighting and who were you trying to impress with this?
There was a global community, hackers from all across the globe. You know, Russians were a very predominant force in the hacking community. A lot of Brazilians and Americans, Canadians, basically everybody was just mingled together, and hackers were going at each other's throats to see who was the best and, you know, what exactly capabilities everyone had.
It's interesting that the war was between hackers, but the collateral damage was these companies and the economy in terms of what you were destroying.
It's exactly like a back alley fight that ended up in the middle of a mall. These companies ended up being, you know, collateral damage to some of the attacks I did, even though they weren't the main target.
So you're 15 years old. You've just had created something that has meant that these huge companies can't do internet business. How were you found out?
I was actually, they got lucky in the sense that one of my old internet service provider accounts, my login name was actually Mafia Boy. So they made the link because they did a broad search in Montreal for anyone that would be using that name.
And they knew it was Montreal from the ISP. They could tell where it was that you were.
Well, because my name started to become really known on that community I was a part of. It was known as Internet Relay Chat. Mm-hmm. And there was informants on there. And when I started to go public, like CNN, for instance, I was actually in a hacker channel. And I asked people to pick a server where they thought was the strongest server out there at the time. Someone had suggested CNN, and sure enough, 15 seconds later, CNN was no longer online.
I am speaking with Michael Calce about his book, Mafia Boy, A Portrait of the Hacker as a Young Man, about he became the most wanted man in cyberspace, or maybe I should say teenager in cyberspace, after hacking into the websites of major corporations, including, as you just mentioned, CNN, E-Trade, and Amazon. The book is published by Lions Press, and we'll have more after a break. I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate today, and I am speaking with Michael Calce. He has a new book called Mafia Boy, A Portrait of the Hacker as a Young Man, from Lions Press. Michael, when you perpetrated all these attacks, you were 15 years old. What did it feel like to know that, as you said before the break, in 15 seconds, CNN's servers were down?
You're obviously drunk on power at this point. I mean, that was part of the problem, too, with realizing what I was doing was wrong at the time, was that I was so, you know, I had so much power at my fingertips. I couldn't really think about the repercussions at that point. I was just so hungry with power and demonstrating the power that I had. You know, it's kind of like that Spider-Man saying, with great power comes great responsibility.
But at 15, that's very... comic book characters tell you that, but it's hard to understand.
Exactly.
You know, I have teenagers at home myself, and I read your tale and thought, where were your mom and dad when all of this was happening?
Well, they were happy most of the time, right? They knew I was on a computer. They figured I wasn't doing malicious things or anything. They were just happy I wasn't on the street doing drugs or doing that sort of stuff. And they were, you know, content to know that I was messing with technology. Just they didn't know in which orderly fashion I was dealing with technology in.
And when you told your dad what was going on, what did he say?
He was taken back at first, you know, to believe that your own son was capable of that and you really were completely oblivious up until that point. But I think he handled it pretty well. I think he saw a bit of brilliance in what I did, but at the same time, he knew it was wrong. So he immediately tried to steer me in the right direction and focus that energy to make it positive instead of negative.
Did that work?
Definitely. I'm an internet security consultant today.
And was that the moment where you stopped doing these attacks? And I know you consulted a lawyer at that point and then were found out. But when was it that you stopped doing these kinds of hacking?
Well, right after he suggested we go see the lawyer, I immediately stopped hacking in all forms of it. I didn't log on to the community. I stayed away from everything, basically.
What was it like to be discovered?
A bit disappointing because I was so secretive about what I had done. And then it just immediately went public. And all my friends were like, you know, when did you have time to do this? Because I was still a pretty sociable person. I was on a basketball team. I had girlfriends. People were completely oblivious to what I was doing, so everyone was taken back a bit by, you know, when was I able to do this? How did I manage to do this?
Were people hurt that you hadn't brought them into this life that you were leading?
I wouldn't say hurt. I guess they felt a bit that I was like repressed too much and I didn't really divulge too much information, but I think they were more surprised than anything else.
Now, as you say, you are an internet security consultant. How does your experience understanding how to break things up help you work with companies to put up walls so that that doesn't happen?
Similar concept would be, you know, if you really want to secure a bank, the best ideal way to do that would be to go to a bank robber. He knows the ins and outs the same way that I know the ins and outs of computer systems and networks. I'm able to use my knowledge that I, you know, came across when I was a very young age to use it for better today because I know a lot of the ins and outs that most people don't know and they don't teach in school.
There are also, you know, earlier in the show today, I was speaking to a man who looks at the intelligence community, and he was talking about the failure of imagination sometimes to understand what your enemy is going to do. And there is some imagination in what it is you put together. So do you find when you're working with clients, you have to kind of put yourself back in the head of somebody who's trying to approach them and break through their security wall and find the most creative way to do that?
Definitely, especially a lot of CEOs, you know, you have to talk to them in a very concise manner and you have to explain it to them in a manner and a fashion they'll understand. Because if you go too much into the technical jargon, they won't really understand it. So you have to come up with a lot of creative ways. A good example would be the social engineering portion of hacking, where I would put on, you know, a New York police hat and I would gain access to a building. And in turn, I would get access to their server like that by socially engineering people.
So you, do you mean physically you would put on a police hat or within the internet you would put on?
No, definitely physically. I mean, a better example would be I'd print out a, let's say, you know, a Chase Bank tag and says I'm from a VP from another state. And you got to social engineer the people to gain access. And this is a very, you know, very high risk and it's still very effective today.
And so do you do this to show them where their weaknesses are?
Absolutely. It's not just focused mainly on the computer servers. Of course, we obviously, you know, I'll take a look at that as well. But there is that social engineering aspect that employees are completely unaware of the dangers that they're a liability to the whole company.
You work with companies, but at the end of your book, you talk about the rest of us. And I have to say, I found that very sobering. In fact, I turned my computer off when I left the house this morning because one of your rules is don't leave your internet access open when you're not using your computer. Can you talk about, from your perspective as someone who has broken through into individual computers, what is it that we should be doing every day to protect ourselves?
Well, I made a very elaborate guide in my book, but to give you some good examples, you know, password strength is a huge issue right now, and a lot of people are using the same password for all their accounts, and a lot of the most common password in the world is actually password. Okay, so you could see the threat there where it's very simple to crack and gain access to all your documents and emails. So, you know, strength of passwords is an issue. Another good tip would be every time you change your
To strengths of passwords, what is a strong password?
Well, you should be using uppercase, lowercase, try and throw some special characters in there, a bunch of numbers mixed with letters.
And how do you remember these things? I think that's the problem that most people have, is if you have lots of different passwords and they're not real words. I know sometimes I'll go to a site and think, what did I put as my password for this one?
That's part of the dilemma, right? A lot of people like practicality, and it's easy to have one simple password for all your accounts. But the fact is, you got to draw the line between practicality and security. You really got to deal with it. I use a lot of weird passwords, and I'm able to adjust to it. Sure, at first you might have a bit of trouble, but if you're going to, you know, you could write it down on a piece of paper and hide that piece of paper. Don't store it on your computer. But you could write it down on a piece of paper the good old-fashioned way.
I mean, could you put it in your address book and then put your address book in a drawer? Or do you need to, like, put the piece of paper in the hiding place where you keep your jewelry?
It's not a bad idea. Me, you could never be. It's better safe than sorry. I mean, I would put it in a safe or a very secure place.
And then have to go get it every time you want to access that website.
Hopefully you'll start to remember it, even though it might be a bit complex.
But that's interesting, the difference between and the balance between ease of access and security. And it sounds like you are saying go on the security side.
Oh, definitely. Look at online banking, for instance.
In the book, you say you don't do online banking.
Absolutely. I don't have an ATM card. I don't use credit cards.
And why not?
Because everything is a risk right now. You go into a convenience store, you buy something, and you know, a day later your card has been cloned and someone else is using your credit card.
So what do you do, cash and checks? Is that how you...
Cash is king in my books.
And how about, you said that there's the 3-month rule, like your toothbrush. You need to change your passwords every 3 months.
Absolutely. You got to stay one step ahead of the hacker because you might be part of a log file. Maybe he just didn't get to your password yet. Like he has other accounts to go through first, let's say, for instance. And by the time he gets to your account, your password has been changed. And thus you've avoided a serious threat.
What are the other key things that individuals should be doing to protect themselves?
A good tip would be to instill a firewall on your system. A lot of people aren't using firewalls yet. And, you know, I don't think most people at home would be leaving their home with windows open and doors unlocked. And that's pretty much what you're doing on your computer system if you don't have a firewall instilled.
And some computers come with firewalls. And are firewalls things like, I know my husband has put anti-spyware on our computer. In fact, I think it's the company, there was that big case that was announced this morning that McAfee has said that various things have been compromised by hackers coming from China that may be government sponsored. But is it important to put something like Norton antivirus or?
I don't really like a lot of the big name products. Not only does it slow your CPU down, but I tend to use some of the free products. You could use Kaspersky. There's also Malwarebytes, which is 100% free and very effective.
And what else? Are there other things that people just don't really think about but are an essential piece of personal protection?
Well, we're going to talk about Facebook right now because it obviously is one of the biggest networks in the world to date. And people are just willingly putting information online. They're accepting all kinds of application requests from their friends. And little do they know, there's actually viruses and keyloggers and Trojans tied into those applications. And there's also a lot of data mining going on from Facebook and Google.
Data mining as in, all right, where are you now and what are you doing and what are the things that you love?
Exactly. What have you been searching? And then all of a sudden you visit another website where there's also Google AdSense. And sure enough, all the ads are based on what you had been searching already.
So, you know, that's true if you have Gmail. It's looking at what you're typing in your emails and then offering you ads based on whether you've written the word book in your email. So how do you avoid those sorts of things?
Well, you'll never completely eliminate the risk. You actually can only minimize it. So, I mean, I got to say, you got to be prudent about what information you're putting online and be very aware. That could be the strongest tool.
I've been speaking with Michael Calce, who has written a book, Mafia Boy, A Portrait of the Hacker as a Young Man, Lions Press. We have just a couple of seconds left. What, for you, is the biggest change in your life now? You're still involved with computers, but how has your connection to them changed from being a hacker to working in security?
Well, obviously, I had more malicious intent when I was younger, and I made a huge shift over to helping people, and that's a huge reason why I actually wrote this book, is to better educate people, because the truth is, right now, it's a very serious risk, and there's a lot of threats out there, and people are very oblivious to what's going on, and I think that it's crucial that we take this very seriously and start paying attention to what we're doing online.
Thank you so much. Michael Calce is the author of Mafia Boy, A Portrait of the Hacker as a Young Man, and it's from Lions Press. Thanks again.
Thank you, Julie. Appreciate it.